Welcome to Real Career Talk. I'm your host, Phil Perquette. This is a monthly podcast that's being brought to you by The Network, where we will spend an hour each month sharing a cup of coffee or your favorite morning drink, talking to internal and external experts about career topics, hot topics, including our talent development pillars for 2020, emotional intelligence, education, skills development, and networking. I am honored to have in our presence today, Gary Gatson. He's our assistant vice president of training overall for AT&T with training operations. And we also have Latricia Shepherd. She is the director of talent development. Welcome. Welcome, Gary. Welcome, Ms. Shepherd.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having me.
Excellent to be here.
Well, I am honored. I am excited also about what you're going to share with us and the possibilities that we're going to uncover. So let's first talk. Let me just get some insight. First of all, tell me a little bit about yourself, who you are, what are you known for? Let's start with Ms. Shepherd.
Sure. So again, Latricia Shepherd here. I am, like you said, Director of Talent Management here at AT&T, and I'm responsible for helping drive talent engagement and interaction, mainly for our key talent across the business. My team specifically focuses on executive development across all the companies. We also have talent analytics as a part of helping support our business units and leaders across the business related to their talent needs. Some of the programs that we have in our docket on my team include vice president development across the business. We also have segment programs, including the Executive Black Leadership Experience. We also are going to launch a new segment experience next year. I won't go into that, but just know that we do have a focus on specific segment leadership development. We also have strategic mentoring in my organization or on my team. And so those of you that have interacted with hopefully a lot more this year around the concept of mentoring, sponsorship, and advocacy, we manage that across the businesses as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, welcome, Latricia. Welcome this morning. All right, Mr. Gatson, talk to us.
Hey, yeah, thanks. Thanks again for having me. So I'm Gary Gatson. I'm the Assistant Vice President of AT&T University Operations. So what that means is my team is responsible for delivering training and learning and development for all of AT&T's technology organization. We know it as ATO and AT&T Business. So let's first start with ATO. On the technology organization, my team is responsible for delivering learning and development for all of the employees within the organization. So think everything from premise technicians, core techs, all the way up to think radio access network engineers, software developers, and the like. So it runs the gamut on the technical side. On the business side, most of the training takes the form of sales effectiveness training. So it's really training on new technologies. And also a big pillar of what we do across both organizations is much of the skills transformation work. So I know we're going to get into that, but that includes upskilling folks for new and future ready jobs, as well as helping people who are moving from different roles and job functions to acquire new skills. So I'll stop there, and we'll probably get into more details over the course of our discussion.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Gatson. I appreciate it. Thank you, Ms. Shepherd. Thank you all for taking time out to be with us here today. Let's just dive right in. And the first thing I'd like to do, though, you know, it's morning time here. I want to ask, what's your cup of coffee or drink that we're sharing as we're discussing, as we get prepared for the right atmosphere? Ms. Shepherd, what are you drinking? What are you drinking? Is it a cup of coffee?
So I'm actually drinking water right now, but my favorite hot morning drink is a chai latte with coconut milk.
A chai latte. All right. That's awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
My favorite.
All right. chai latte with coconut milk, not 2%. Coconut. All right. Let's go with this. All right. All right, Mr. Gaston, what are you drinking?
Okay, so I go to Starbucks pretty regularly. So I get a grande almond milk latte, no foam. So that's kind of boring, but that's what it is. It's soothing for me. Why not
the foam?
Because it takes away from the coffee. So I want more almond milk in it, and I don't want them to take up the space with foam. So it makes it a tad bit richer, and plus I usually don't put sweetener in it, and so I let the almond milk serve as my sweetener.
I receive that. All right, great. I am also that Starbucks, snooty Starbucks person in there. I guess that's what my wife calls me. So I am drinking a venti dark roast misto with 5 pumps hazelnut. Don't you start, Gary. 5 pumps hazelnut and 2% milk. Now, that's awesome.
That's great.
How I like to start my day, right? All right. So let's dive right into it. So the first question that we have for the both of you together is, why is continuous learning so important? And let's start with Latricia. Why is continuous learning so important?
So I believe that continuous learning is important, and by way of interest and kind of professional background, my skill set is driven around this whole concept of education, development, leadership, executive development, and so this is a topic that's very near and dear to my heart. I believe that it is the main pillar of anyone's career, right, and leadership tenet. To continuously learn, to be in a place where you are a vessel and you are interested in broadening beyond your space, right, that you know, or your area of reverence or reference is important. And why is that important? Because developing and understanding trends and patterns, various industries, and really honing in on the skills that you have, either in a current role or, right, moving into a next role. There's something to be said about a person who is very interested in the likes of more, right, and very interested in broadening their scope. Reading is important. I know Gary will talk about some of the tools that we have in the company, but what I will say is it's about constant expansion of skills, right, through learning, increasing your knowledge, and adapting accordingly. And that can help drive a person's career. We've seen evidence of it across the board, not only in people realizing it in their career, but also offering it out as a company, from pivot training and skills training and nano degrees. So we're a company where that is a value in addition to that, right? So there's my own thought about it, but there's the company thought, right? In our values, we talk about continuous learning, equipping our people and making sure that we do that as a company. And of course, to make sure that that can be achieved, we provide out lots of different learning opportunities. And it's really key and important for all of our employees and leaders across the globe, right, to continuously have an interest in learning and taking a part in that to drive their skill set.
All right. Thank you, Gary. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'll piggyback on what Latricia shared. For me, it's pretty simple, right? So the business, for us to thrive as a business, or any business for that matter, businesses need to continue to evolve itself, right? It's about what can you do to continue to move the needle, have impact within the marketplace. And so that holds true for the employees of those companies and businesses as well. So if you're not constantly evolving, if you're not constantly making yourself relevant, and then really a business won't thrive, and individually in your career, you won't thrive. You know, Latricia grew up in the learning and development and executive education space. Although I'm in AT&T University today, I actually grew up on the operations side of the business. So I've had various roles from engineering to sales, software development, finance, product development, a number of different roles. And really the greater impact, you can have a greater impact on the business by bringing things that are relevant, skills that are relevant to the job or the function at hand. And so it's really about value creation, value add for the business, and subsequently that flows down to the actual employee. So to sum that up, Phil, it's really about staying relevant, continuing to add value, and making contributions to the enterprise.
Mm-hmm. So I want to continue on that path. So now let's think about our audience. And Latricia, so think about that person that says, you know what, you know, I'm in regards to learning, in regards to developing, I'm good. I'm happy in my role. I'm happy in my role. What would you say to that person that says to you, I'm happy in my role. I'm happy about what I'm doing. And I get Gary who talks about maintaining relevance. You know, as my network employee told me once, you know what, I want to stay marketable. Okay, but say I'm good in my role. What would you say to them?
So I think that being good in your role and making a choice about your career to stay in a certain space, to stay at a certain level, that's totally a person's individual preference. Mm-hmm. What I would say, if that is the decision that the person has made, is that it's very, very important to understand the landscape around them. Is that something that is encouraged as the part of the culture of that business? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Is that a specialty that you have created such that, as Gary said, you are so relevant and your skill set is so specialized that you are the go-to person, that you are the expert or SME in that specific area? If the answer to those last two questions is I'm not sure or no, then that's where you fill in the gap. If you've made the decision to stay in that specific industry discipline, then you go out and make sure, as Gary mentioned, that you are grasping and finding every possible tool, sharpening the skills, and really creating a lot more insula and layers in that space related to education, certifications, workshops, and really showing and sharing that, yes, I'm interested in staying in this role. I'm good, as you say, quote unquote, I'm good, I'm fine. But continuously learning about whatever discipline and whatever area you've decided is very important. And there's lots of, you know, there's depth to a certain industry, right? You're an operator, you're in digital marketing. There's always something to learn. Why? Because technology changes overnight as we sleep, right? Industries change, companies are stood up, companies are sunset. And so it's very important to continuously stay on the trend and understanding whether you choose to go into a different arena or not, you are continuously making sure you're the master of whatever that discipline is.
I want to talk about technology. You mentioned technology, and we see technology, as you stated, is changing literally overnight. There's data actually that supports that there will be a shortage of employment. There will be a shortage of workers, actually, because the industry will require some type of technical background, technical expertise in some way, shape, or form. What if you have that individual out there that's going, and Gary, you also can chime in on this from the technical aspect, that ATO. So what would you say to that individual who is looking at this landscape? They see the shift taking place where technology is really, you know, in abundance. Talk to me about what should they be looking for? How should they even try to dive in? Where? What are some of the things that they should be looking to focus on from a technology standpoint? Go ahead. You know what, Gary? Go ahead.
Yeah. So from a technology perspective, there are some recurring themes in the marketplace. Those things that are occurring in the larger marketplace certainly impacts our company, AT&T, especially as we move from or have moved from being just a primary telecommunications company into being a telecommunications media and technology company, a lot of the things that are applicable in the marketplace are applicable to us. So there are some themes that are emerging that are really hotbeds and hot areas to consider if, to answer your question, you want to move and consider some technology areas. Some areas that stand out are data analytics, big data, machine learning, artificial intelligence, things like cybersecurity, networking, software development, technology management, technology architecture. So agile development, programming, things of that nature are areas that you may want to consider because there's going to be increasing demand for those skills in the future. There's even a shortage of even down at the primary school levels, there's increasing investment in STEAM or STEM, science, technology, engineering, some included some arts from a design thing, and mathematics. So there's a big push to get more of a funnel in these areas, and they're relevant today, and they're projected to be relevant easily into the next 20 years or so.
All right. So, Ms. Shepherd, did you want to add to that, or we can go on there? It's up to you if you want to add anything.
No, I think when we start talking about the shortage, right, and I think that's why one of the, in addition to being relevant, in addition to making sure that you're the best you that you can offer to your employer, in our case, AT&T, as Gary mentioned, just knowing, right, understanding what's happening in the industry and across the globe related to talent scarcity, right? And all the more reason, I would just say, to put, you know, the plug in and really, really lean in towards what development and learning can look like for you and for your career.
Right. So, Latricia, I want to go back to a broader scope here and talk about skill development in this regard. Does generational differences have an impact when it comes to skill development or how it should be approached?
So I think so. I'm not wanting to, you know, I believe that the way that generations consume learning could potentially rise research out there around how that's being done. So for example, we're now into, so 10 years ago when I was designing training, in the very group that Gary has right now, well, on the retail side, sales retail side, the training was a lot of web-based, and that was the new big thing, right? To develop and create training and learning for learners to digest that was web-based, because just right on the cusp of that was the turn from kind of the leader-led classroom, in classroom, you know, in a seat learning. And now with the shift over the last decade, again, as the generations have changed, you've got evidence everywhere around really quick, 1 to 2 minutes, and you're losing folks, right? But right. 1 to 2 minute bite-size, chunkable, right? They say eat the elephant in pieces, where we used to in training give the elephant, you know, all at one time over several days. Now it's how do you think about how people digest it? So I think it's important for us to remember that. And I think groups like our training organization, our executive development teams, our, you know, TU Learning leadership teams here at AT&T are always looking for ways to make sure that we're staying in line with what the newest thing is, whether it's the technology generation, right, the evolution, or cultural generations, that we're thinking about ways. And so, yes, I do believe that training does happen differently. And so I think we're in that right now. And we've had to have the boomers and the Xers adjust to watching videos and a lot of interactivity and pages flipping for user guides and things of that nature. So, yes, I do believe that generations, and we'll see what happens in the next 10 years, what that looks like. But either way, I think we all have to adjust and embrace it so that we can continue to stay relevant and bring our skills forward.
So I got to tell you, you just struck a nerve. When I first got into telecommunications, I had a manual, and it was the size of two phone books. Mm-hmm. And you had to shift, and you had to shift through the folders, and then don't let you if you don't find the answer, then you had to go to find the microfiche.
I mean, that's right.
Do you remember the microfiche? You had to go find the microfiche in the cabinets on the other side of the. So, to your point about Gen Zers and really our Gen Zers out there that are Googlarians, they're known as Googlarians, and you have the nugget size information. They're being bombarded with it. So the question that I have for you is, how do they retain it? How do they retain it and make it a skill? And either one of you can answer that, because there are pluses to it. And what are your thoughts on what they should do to make sure they're retaining what they're learning or what they're observing?
Yes. So I think one of the biggest things that we try to do is to give them practice, repetition. The bottom line, Phil, at that point, it's about giving people early opportunities to apply what they've learned. So in L&D, we know that the greatest retention occurs when there's a problem, maybe a lack of knowledge, a need, right? And at that moment, you give them the answer, the learning, the content to help solve that problem. In those situations, we know it's more likely to retain, or be retained. So when Latricia or you talked about the fact that, hey, you had these big manuals, you had to digest them first 6 weeks, 3 months,
right?
Training class, and then you went out in the field. Now it's more of an approach. Hey, let's get you some foundational knowledge, right? Let's put you in the field, let you get some experience, let you encounter some challenges, and let's get you back into the classroom. Well, then let me give you some additional content to help you overcome the challenges or the lack of knowledge you may have, because in those instances is more likely to stick and resonate. And I wanted to talk to you a little, talk about generational. So one of the things we're seeing, to piggyback on what Latricia said, is, young people now are looking for much more autonomy, right? It's not so much about money in our days, but it's more about experience. It's more about, am I having an impact? The work that I'm doing, is it relevant? Is it meaningful work? And so things like hierarchy, where we grew up in a culture where it was more kind of command and control, top down. I think it's much more team oriented, open spaces, collaborative. It's about how can I work within a group, and things are more organically developed. It's about flexibility. And for us, it was a lot about security. And I think now people are less about security and more about the experience that they're enjoying in the workplace.
So that's awesome. And I think you were describing Agile too, more flat and together, and a collaborative effort as far as learning, as far as developing, progressing, moving forward, achieving. We had this Agile environment taking place. So, Latricia, so what do you think, and two questions combined in a sense, what do you think that we with the network have done well, and what have been some of our greatest successes around development? And then follow that up with, what do you think has been some of our greatest opportunities missed? What's been our biggest mistake when it comes to development?
Sure. So this is a professional development, I already said earlier, is a passion of mine. I had an opportunity as a network member in Atlanta to create, design, and then have a great team worked together to launch the One Atlanta mentoring program back years ago, where we pulled all of the ERGs together, because what was happening, the time for our officers and everybody that we wanted to engage across the different ERGs, there was a challenge, right? There was a time slot challenge. And so we figured, you know what, if we put something together where we collaborate and come up with a mentoring program across the board that all of us can use, what better way to do that than to have peer mentoring where peers from across the different ERGs could connect in circles. And then we're only tapping into those leaders once versus three or four different ERGs doing so. And that program was really great. We did a really great job with that. And then at the national level, right, there used to be the what was called at that time Community Network annual, you know, yearly professional conferences. And then we've evolved into kind of melding that into the ERG conference. And then this year with the 50th year celebration in Washington, D.C., had a chance to see that kind of come back to life, so to speak, which was really, really awesome. And as I was sitting there in Washington, all I could think about in those various segments that they offered, from the larger group ballroom session with Dr. DeGruy to, mm-hmm. you know, the private chats, or the, not the private chats, but the table chats with the different leaders, I thought to myself, how this has come full circle with this organization, and to have been a part of it. And to have worked at it at the local level, to have helped at the national level with some of the folks who were the national professional development leaders. And then to see it happen this year was with the 50-year celebration was really awesome. So I That's think awesome. The opportunities, I think where I see over a you know, 10-year, call it period span with the network, is the tenacity and the desire to stay engaged from a professional development perspective. Mm-hmm. So even when the edict came down to kind of make the shift to meld into the ERG conference, the network now, right, called the network now, continued to find ways to offer professional development to its members and across AT&T. Mm-hmm. I've seen that. I've been a part of that and been very proud to see it. So the will to stay in it, to stay in the professional development space, being able to reach out and find topics that are relevant, I think has been awesome. I think the opportunities that we have is to get back to what we saw in DC this past summer, which is to continue to find and expand upon ways like this podcast, finding ways to offer technology and training, which Gary and I both, and all of us clearly love, because we're testing out this particular software and finding ways to offer podcasts and unique learning experiences that attract the now, right, generation that we are wanting to come into the network. So I'm an auntie now of the network. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, I was, you know, part of the young professionals group. So I think it's important, if we want to attract the talent that we know is scarce, that we want to make sure that those folks are finding a way to attract themselves to this particular ERG and others. We have to stay engaged. We have to, our offerings related to learning, professional development have to have a spark. It has to be very clear that as an organization, we understand the relevant topics, industry challenges and concerns, and what our members want to hear and what they need, right? So it's important that we're going and asking, what are you looking for? What are you interested in? And I think the opportunity is exactly what's been done here. Tap into our existing and internal training, talent development, and TU leadership organizations. Get in front of and meet with those folks and say, hey, what's on your plan for 2020? What kind of topics are you going to be offering to high potentials? What are you going to be offering to ATO leaders? What are some of the topics you're going to offer out in TU leadership? Know what those topics are and offer those same, find a way to uniquely tie yourself to those topics so that you're drilling down, because those topics may not meet and touch all of the network members, right, through TU leadership, through high potential development programs, through what Gary is offering the business unit sales teams or training teams. But if we drill down into this organization and offer it as well, right? It's like the it's like the old sales and marketing adage. You continue to share it, you continue to share it, and eventually they buy. Learning is the same. You continue to put it out there, you continue to share, and you build up the knowledge and it starts to swell among your members. So I think that's the opportunity we have.
Gary, did you want to add into that where you see our greatest successes as far as development and our greatest opportunity?
Yeah, I was able to attend the event in the D.C. area as well. And I was really blown away about how the past was connected to where we are today and sort of that rich history of what it took to stand up this organization was really, really profound. And the impact this organization has had on the careers of those who've come through this organization, I mean, it's actually a model for all the other EGs, employee groups, or employee resource groups. So in many ways, I think the network was actually the catalyst for all these other organizations. That is by far the most outstanding thing that the network can continue to hold its hat on as being a pioneer in this area. Where I think the opportunities are, you know, it could be a little bit off base, but I think there's an opportunity to really start to connect with the people who are coming up, right? I think that somehow we're losing the opportunity to connect with the other folks who are coming into the organization, who are new to the organization. They don't seem to be joining as quickly as I think they should. And so I think that is a community opportunity for us, those in the network, those that are not in the network, to kind of figure out to make it relevant to them, because I think it's more relevant than the ones who are not participating. It's probably more relevant than they appreciate at the moment. And the other thing I say is the network provides tremendous opportunity for those and those that are in it around some of the things we haven't talked about. I won't elaborate as much as, you know, Patricia said all there is to be said about the learning and development opportunity, but really the other opportunities around networking, the leadership, the soft skills that you can get, right? Being leaders within the network and the exposure opportunities you get across peer groups, across functional groups, and with executives are really unparalleled and I think are slightly underappreciated. And that's what I think is a real opportunity that may be missed by some.
Actually, we're not going to steal the thunder of the organizer. Networking is going to be one of our topics coming down the funnel in a little while. But you're absolutely right, Gary. Networking, and when we think of networking, we think of staying connected, right? So we're gonna talk more about that. But I want to shift a little bit, Gary, and talk about the degree. Now, here in with the network, and we're talking about generational differences, there might be a lot of us out there that don't have a degree. So talk to us about right now. And of course, if you have a degree, we're talking about, we have continuous development and nano degrees and certifications. But you were talking about relevance, maintaining relevance earlier. For those of us that are out there, that are maybe at the baby boomer era or the older Xer, how significant would a degree be to them? How significant is a degree just in general? But I want you to talk to those generational, those baby boomers and Xers out there as well.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. And it, you know, there is no right answer to that. But let me put it in some perspective, right? When you start from the point, it really depends still on what your goal is and what you're trying to attain and where you're trying to go in your career. So all of this has that caveat around it, but it's really about staying relevant, right? So you don't necessarily have to have a bachelor's degree per se, but you know, we have things like nano degrees. We have certifications in a number of different areas. So there are many different ways to to display competence and expertise in different areas beyond just having a degree. So again, mm-hmm. I think the main point is, how do you remain marketable, and how do you continue to add value, significant value, to an organization? Because as a leader in the business, we're always looking at, okay, who are our top performers? Mm-hmm. Who can I least afford to do without? Who am I thinking about when it's time to tackle that new project? And so a degree or a certification really help you to show your team, your leadership, that you have the necessary skills to succeed. And certainly you can do that just by experience alone, which now brings me to the second part of the certification and then subsequently a degree. Mm-hmm. It's an increasingly competitive marketplace. Now, when you start talking about promotions, Bill, which is a different thing, you know, if you want to distinguish yourself, in many ways, a degree has become the table stakes.
Right.
So no longer, when you start moving up the organization, you're talking about trying to get to associate director. You're trying to lead team. You want to get to director level. You know, if I'm looking at a slate of candidates, you know, and you know, 9 out of 10 have degrees and 1 does not have degrees, you know, it kind of makes unless there's some really compelling experience that the person without a degree has, really it becomes an easy way to weed you out if you don't have that sort of formal credential. So right. Again, it's less about, at this point, can you do the job, which most people think. I mentor a lot of people and they say, hey, I can do that job. Well, that's a true statement, but actually I probably have 10 people who can do the job. Now I'm trying to weed out, how can I get the best candidate possible? And in those scenarios, a degree becomes something that actually is an added checkbox when mm-hmm. making that decision. And I'm giving you that perspective from a leader's perspective, not from someone who's actually competing for the job. So mm-hmm. does that make sense? Does that kind of make it mm-hmm. Clear about why it could be important as you seek out other opportunities?
I believe that's powerful, you know, because you have I'm a baby boomer, and you have those that have been in the role been in our roles for a while. And we have people that are looking at transitioning, and you can look at it twofold to your response. You can look at it for that person that says, okay, if I want to be relevant, I got to go out here and make myself competitive. I have to be competitive. I have to make sure that I'm a qualifier. I have the right qualifiers. That's an excellent point. And for those that have gotten a degree and then considering going on and to Latricia's point earlier, continuously developing and maintaining that relevance by continuously looking to better yourself. That's an excellent point. All right, so I want to segue into another question. And this question is really for you, Gary. You can chime in as well, Latricia. So when you think about our work environment, you think about our population out there, those that are entering the workforce. I just graduated. We've been talking about graduating. We've been talking about degrees. I just graduated. Now it's about learning. Now it's about, I want to get somewhere in the business so I can be relevant, so I can develop where I want to go, whatever my path is that I'm looking to achieve, on whatever my goals are. So, Gary, with that said, how do you gain those critical corporate skills? We think about the extraordinary leadership model. We think about our pillars. We think about, and I really want to share with you at this point, one of our officers once stated, I think that what they said was, I believe that we our graduates are lacking in critical thinking. So from a point of communication, from a point of critical thinking and process improvement, those that are entering the workforce, how do they gain those critical corporate skills necessary to be relevant?
No, I appreciate that question, Phil. And I can probably, I can understand why that executive would say that, given the current climate of social media and sort of the short, communication of Twitter and things of that nature, while social media is actually connecting us worldwide, and creating communities, we feel even more connected than ever before. The inverse in some ways is happening, that we're not exercising, not practicing some of the more basic communication skills, things like public speaking, even one-on-one interaction, small groups settings. So as we think about critical, as you would call them, corporate skills, I think first and foremost, one that is very important is communication skills. And this is written communication, it's verbal communication. We like to use the term now collaboration, but what we're really talking about is how do we communicate with one another and getting very comfortable with communicating with one another. And I think the only way to pick up those skills is really practicing that. One example, and I think that's one of the benefits of the network, it gives you an opportunity outside the traditional work environment to work on some of those people skills, presentational skills, organizational skills, leadership skills in an environment where that is not as high stakes. And critical thinking skills, I think that's very important, sort of a grounding in terms of a fundamental education. The degree can help with that. Obviously, some of these things can be acquired without going formally to school. But, you know, being able to, you know, not just read, but, you know, Latricia mentioned earlier, reading books, staying current right. and relevant in the marketplace. Those kind mm-hmm. of skills, what I would call liberal arts skills, liberating arts, as it's known, gives you freedom to interact and learn how to read the dynamics of whatever environment you're in. And one of the things I'll leave you with in closing on this, what I've found is that we continue to think that this is just about the technical skills that I have, that if I'm doing a great job, the rest of this will take care of itself. But really, we're talking about collaboration. We're talking about the ability to work in teams, the ability for people to want to work with you. And these are things that are less about your IQ and more about your EQ, right? It's more about your emotional quotient and your emotional intelligence and your ability to get along with others, to get a mutual beneficial outcome for the business that you're in. So I think these things are important. They can be picked up many different ways, but to your point, they're often undervalued. And in the workplace of collaboration, they become even more important to your success.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great point, because when you think about interviewing, and you the interviewer wants to know that you have the skill sets, but they also want to make sure that you're the right fit for their team, for their culture. And it is about, you know, your passion. It is about, you know, how well do you communicate for those out there that are looking to move into and get settled into that role. Ms. Shepherd, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I think Gary hit it on the head. I think exactly what you mentioned is what's necessary. So let's see what else we have in our rest of our time together.
Okay. All right. So I do have a couple more questions, actually. So do you all agree, and both of you all can answer this, do you all agree that with the pretense that you should not stay in a role more than 2 years? And we'll start with you, Gary. What do you think about that? We have heard, as a matter of fact, some of my college graduates that come into my classes with leadership development, AT&T University, they actually say, well, we're told, Phil, we shouldn't stay in our roles, in our roles more than 2 years. And we need to move forward and look for other things to do in regards to learning the business. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on what you're trying to accomplish in your career. So I have friends, I went to engineering school, and, you know, I have friends who wanted to be engineers, and that's what right. they wanted to focus on. And so, you know, it wouldn't make much sense for someone who's in engineering to go over to marketing. You know, maybe it'll make them more well-rounded in terms of understanding the significance of what they're developing from a product development perspective. So, you know, I can see moving every 2 or 3 years could be important to one's goal. But I think as long as you're constantly learning, picking up new skills, as long as you feel excited and keep that passion that you talked about, I don't think it's necessary that you move around every 2 years. Now, that being said, if your goal is to become a general manager, a VP, a well-rounded executive, I think it's very important that you get a breadth of experiences within the business so you can understand how many different functions work, because at the end of the day, that'll make you a much more effective executive. So to answer that question, it really depends on what your goals are. If you went to undergrad in marketing and you always envision yourself to be, you know, a sales and marketing professional, you know, I don't see much experience in going to HR if that was your goal. So that's how I would answer that question.
Okay. All right. So think about training paths that are out there that are available, Gary, for management and non-management. And we're talking about learning new skills and to your point, learning and finding our passion and growing in our passion, because we have the old saying, you know, if you find a role that's and you're passionate about it, you'll never work another day in your life. Right. So what can they do as far as their path that they can take, whether they're a manager, non-management employees, network audience in mind? What are the training paths that are available for them?
Okay, now this part, so this is getting sort of specific to AT&T. I know the audience, everyone is not necessarily an employee per se, but this is specifically what we have available in AT&T. So we have roughly, and it's an organic process, but we have roughly 14 different learning paths and areas. And even within those 14 learning paths, there are sub-learning paths under that. So I will give you an example. We have a data analytics component. And even within there's analytics, there's data engineering, data manipulation, data analysis. So, and so some of the 14 areas, I actually touched on it earlier, include things like marketing and sales, software development, cybersecurity, as well as things like network engineering and technology architecture, just to name a few. Now, those courses are available to management employees as well as non-management employees. So that's a view of the learning paths. So let me break it down a little further than that. So we think about learning on three levels, right? One is the foundational level. So you may say to me, hey, you got 14 learning paths, but Gary, I really don't know which one to go into. I don't know which one I may enjoy. You talked about, you never work a day in your life when you find something that you love. So we have what we call our foundational level. So we have a series of content and learning experiences that are at the foundational level. So that means if you're even in the call center, or if you're in sales, or if you're in a technician, the foundational level is accessible to employees across the enterprise to understand the very basics of these different areas of learning, right? And so you take that to kind of explore what you may enjoy. Then next, if you find an area you may enjoy, then we have the next level. That's more skills development, job readiness, sort of the career path. That second one, the second tier of learning really provides content to allow you to move in different jobs or allow you to get deeper learning in your current job. And then the next level is more advanced, right? You have a career and now you want to go deeper. You want to be seen as a subject matter expert. We have what we call our advanced learning. Now, many times that takes the form of certification, nano degrees, even bachelor degrees, as well as master's degrees. So we have relationships with several universities. And again, this is within AT&T, where you can get discounted tuition from those universities for advanced degrees in areas like software engineering, MBA, MIS, data analytics masters, even to name a few, with such institutions like Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, University of Oklahoma, North Carolina A&T, just to name a few. So I know that was a big breadth of things that we have made available to our employees. But as Latricia said earlier, you know, continuous learning is valued within our company, and we want to make sure we provide the tools necessary for our employees to advance. One other thing I'll add is that this learning is not only available formally, we also have relationships with organizations such as Udacity, Coursera, as well as LinkedIn Learning, also to provide even more supplemental learning for our employees. So I know that's a mouthful, but I think we have a breadth of solutions for our employees to take advantage of.
That's powerful. That's great insight. And you know what? What we find is AT&T is committed. AT&T is definitely engaged and wanting their teams, their employees to grow and develop, be marketable, and be relevant, as we've heard today. What a powerful session, Gary, Latricia. I really appreciate you all taking time out. The organizer, LaTanya Floyd, I know she appreciates you. I think it's been awesome, and I think it's just a wonderful opportunity to share with the network community how they can be powerfully present, what they can do from an educational standpoint, continuously developing and remaining relevant. We got a couple of minutes remaining. I'm going to give you the opportunity to just share last insights, views that might be still lingering there that you don't want them to lose out on. Let's start with you, Ms. Shepherd.
Sure. So I would say to wrap up this conversation and all that we've heard, which you're right, Bill, has been immensely wonderful for the last hour or so that we've been doing this. I've learned a lot. I've been re-energized myself in our conversation. So thank you to you and to LaTanya for the opportunity. What I would say is when we start thinking about, again, back to learning, back to coming to work and appear kind of operating as our best self, it's very important that we have the tools to do that. And so that's what this conversation has been all about, continuous learning, developing. But I want to go back to something that my friend and colleague Gary mentioned in his talk previously around this idea of interaction when he talked about the opportunities for community network. We've seen in this last year, we've implemented a lot more interaction in our development programs when it comes to putting our leaders and leaders of leaders together in spaces where that's possible. Now, of course, with cost containment, it's not always possible to do that. But what I will say that I have managed to notice that is increasingly more important now probably than ever is this idea of what do you bring to the table? It's this idea of making sure that for as much as you want a mentor and as much as you're interested in advocacy and as much as you're interested in sponsorship, that is so incumbent upon you as an individual to make sure that you are bringing what you can to the table. You're bringing a desire to continuously learn. You're bringing a breadth of knowledge and understanding of the business, the strategies. You're bringing an understanding. When I say of the business, you know who the board members are. You're clear on what the structure is. You have some idea of what revenue generation looks like across the company. You don't have to be an expert in it, but you can be versed in having a conversation so that when you do get that opportunity to sit in front of that leader you've been dying to meet, because that's part of your learning as well. Learning is not just in a book, in front of the computer, or pressing buttons to look at a video. It's also learning to connect, sit down, and bring yourself to the table and have really good, meaningful conversation with the leaders that you want to connect with.
Powerful words. Thank you. Thank you so much, Ms. Shepherd. Gary, final thoughts?
Yeah. So first, thank you for the opportunity. This has been great for me. I've really enjoyed it. I would just say, I think Latricia really, I echo what she said, but I'll summarize it like this, because I think there's a variety of people on that may listen to this at many different levels. When it comes to skills development, I think sometimes we think that some of these things may be beyond me, that I may not have the ability to do some of those things. I think someone asked me what was an early mistake I had in my career. And one of the things I would always say is, you know, I didn't actually dream big enough, that I wish I had set higher goals and higher expectations for myself. What I would share with the audience is that you can do any of these things, and you can do whatever you set your mind to do. And it really is within your capabilities. I mean, you just have to set a goal, make a plan, and go achieve this. If it's out there, there's a very strong possibility that you can achieve it. So don't sell yourself short. It's well within your grasp and your reach. That's the reason we develop these tools. That's the reason we develop this content, because you can achieve it if you just believe in it. And so that's what I'll leave with the audience, Bill.
Gary, I want to thank you for those words, powerful words. Gary Gadsden, Latricia Shepherd, we thank you. The network thanks you for your insight, your vision, and just your transparency sharing with our employees. And we want to thank you. We're wrapping up. We're looking forward to our next Real Career Talk. Everyone have a powerful day.